My name is Josh Null. I'm the assistant curator in the Whipple Museum of the History of Science. So the reason we're putting the display together was we were approached by Jane Munro, the curator of Silent Partners. She was looking for some complementary displays to be put together in other museums. And she knew that the Whipple had this really rather amazing collection of anatomical models. The Whipple's collection has a lot of different models in it, teaching models particularly. We've collected quite proactively in this area. And like a number of history of science institutions, we have a particularly large number of models by one maker of the name Louis Thomas Jerome Ozu, although Ozu himself established a firm that used the Ozu name well into the 20th century. So we agreed that we would just put on a small display in a couple of cases of pretty much all of the Ozu material that we have in the museum as a just kind of an interesting complement to this idea of mannequins and the use of mannequins in art, to talk about the use of models and particularly human anatomical models in the history of science, particularly in the teaching of medicine and anatomy. He was born in Normandy in 1797, and he went to Paris to study medicine, and he excelled there, and he graduated in 1818. And he was then immediately appointed to the surgical department of the Hôtel Dieu, the major centre of surgery in Paris. And it was there that he soon realised that medicine was struggling from a real lack of cadavers. After the French Revolution, the discipline had really begun to modernise and had shifted away from a kind of theoretical approach towards a much more practical, hands-on, physiological approach. But this was hampered by just the lack of cadavers that were available for students to dissect. So while he himself was working as a surgeon, he began to experiment with model making as a way of improving anatomical modeling. The key thing that Ozu was looking to do was to improve on the tradition of anatomical model making, which was based principally in wax. So wax models were fairly prevalent within medical departments and teaching departments for medicine, but they had their limitations. Wax is very fragile. It's quite difficult to work with. It requires a great deal of artisanal skills. So wax models were quite expensive. They're fragile and they can't be made of component parts. They can only be one solid form. So they're not very good for kind of hands-on teaching. You generally have to use them just as demonstrational models. And what Ozu realized was that potentially, if one used papier-mâché, you could actually start making models that could be composed of multiple different parts, and that therefore you could make anatomical models that, like a human cadaver, could be dissected and then reassembled as part of teaching. So he was really influenced by, on the one hand, there were other model makers who had started working in papier-mâché, but also by puppeteers in Paris who had long been making models with papier-mâché. And so Ozu started to experiment. His real breakthrough was he was able to develop a completely new recipe for papier-mâché that made it much tougher than normal papier-mâché, which you and I would normally associate with a fairly kind of flimsy, fragile material. What Ozu did was he added components, fibers and powders to the pulp mixture so that when it solidified, it actually became very tough. If you handle an Ozu model, it almost feels like the components are made of wood. They're really quite solid, hard objects. But because they're papier-mâché, you can actually mold them into a real myriad of shapes. His story is really one of a meteoric rise. The models are immediately successful. Because unlike wax models, they're robust, they're dissectable, they're labelable so that you can actually have a list of the names of all of the parts to go along with the model. And crucially, they're also mass producible. So Ozu's models, when he presents them to the medical establishment in Paris, initially they're kind of handmade one-off, but he immediately starts to get commissions from the Ministry of the Interior to provide models to the teaching departments in Paris. And so he establishes a factory in his hometown of Saint-Aubin-d'Escreville in Normandy. And this rapidly expands, and soon it's employing well over 100 people who, rather than making individual models, are beginning to actually mass produce these models. Because, of course, once you have a given mold for a different given component, you can mold the component over and over again, and then you can assemble. The models were generally assembled around a metal frame. They would be assembled, they would be hand-painted, and then they would have an egg-based lacquer put on them to give them a really tough, shiny coating. And at that point, you can then ship them all over, initially all over France, and then all over the world, and they're tough enough that they can survive shipping, they can survive handling, and then they can survive the rigors of working within teaching departments. So the factory is established in 1828. By 1839, the French Ministry of Education actually stipulates that Ozu models must be acquired by all public medical and anatomical institutions. So he's got effectively the French state as this huge purchaser of his models. And from there, they become internationally successful. And we see them now in the collections of institutions all around the world. We have two human models, one of which is really quite small, it's only about 35 centimeters tall, and one of which is really quite large, it's probably about half human size, a little bit larger, it's about 4 feet tall. He's known to us in the museum as Marcel. Marcel is designed to the kind of classic Ozu model as a kind of multi-use anatomical model for teaching. So externally, he lacks skin so that the underlying muscle and vascular structure is exposed. But beyond that, you can then start to remove parts of him and then disassemble his insides. So the whole front chest section can be removed and then inside exposing the internal organs. And you've then got dozens and dozens of separate removable component internal organs. Each one is labelled either with a name label for a major organ or for smaller parts. They're labelled with a number and you then refer to a hand list to find the name of the constituent part. Even the top of the head comes off and the brain can be taken out and the brain can be disassembled. So they're really quite elaborate and extraordinary models. I mean, even one of Ozu's early anatomical models had about 66 removable components, and by the time that he was getting commissions from the state to mass produce anatomical models, he was producing them with 139 separate removable components. So you can imagine this kind of assembly line at the factory where you're producing all of these different components. They're all hand painted, they're all labeled, and then they're assembled into this extraordinary anatomical model. And these would be, as you can imagine, really quite expensive, valuable items. And the French state was willing to pay large sums of money to have these then shipped to anatomy schools so that the pressure of anatomical teaching was eased somewhat and they weren't so reliant on cadavers. As well as there being this change in medical practice towards a demand for a more hands-on experimental study, you see actually a very similar thing in zoology. In France in the 1830s, Georges Cuvier is developing a new science of comparative anatomy. Cuvier is suggesting that to study the natural world around us, from fossils through to animals and living specimens, what one needs to do is look at and compare how the anatomy of different animals is similar or differs. And so Ozu recognizes that there's also a market for models of different animal types. And he begins to produce, or the firm begin to produce, different animal types to cover the kind of different, what you might think of as Cuvier specimen types. So the firm produces an almost full-size horse and a full-size gorilla as models of mammals, but you've also got a silkworm and a May beetle, massively enlarged over they're hundreds times enlarged and completely dismountable. You can take them apart, you can look at the internal organs. The variety is quite extraordinary. I mean, he ends up doing a turkey, a viper, a snail, a leech, I mean, all kinds of different models. And a model that we're particularly keen on here in the Whipple is we have a set of horses' teeth, which were modelled to show about 30 different sets of horses' teeth over the range of a horse's life. Horses' teeth vary with age, so you can actually use horses' teeth to age a horse. And so there's this set which comes in a fitted box showing the teeth of a horse from the point of birth all the way through to old age. So Ozu is expanding to meet these new markets as new sciences develop. And you've got the same story in botany. Botany through the mid 19th century is shifting from a science which is based around collecting and classification towards a science which is much more interested in hands-on dissection, experimentation, analysis of the components and structures of plants. And so Ozu also produces dissectable plant models. And Ozu produces fruit models, he produces mushroom models. And so by the latter half of the 19th century, the Ozu catalogues have just an extraordinary variety of different models. There's also the interesting fact that this was in a very small village in Normandy. The factory was put there simply because this was Ozu's birthplace. And so you have this small rural village which suddenly becomes this centre for anatomical model making. It's producing models which are being sold all over the world. And it conjures up an extraordinary image to imagine this large factory in this little Normandy village, and you've got gorillas and huge horses and anatomical models being produced, and hundreds of people sitting around painting these, kind of like a toy factory, but actually they're at the cutting edge of scientific pedagogy. This little village is producing models that have survived in important collections all over the world.